What you're about to hear is part of the Podgods Network. If you have a problem with anything you hear, please write it in an email and go fuck yourself. Enjoy the show.
No, we're good. We're good.
That's got to do it.
Are we all ready?
Yep.
Ready to go!
Yes.
Are we all drunk?
No.
No.
No?
Not yet.
Why not?
Yeah. Working on it.
I'm a little bit disappointed. You should be out your face by now.
We haven't even started yet.
Okay.
But this is an even episode.
Oh, that's true. It'd be odd, isn't it? Oh, fuck.
Welcome to the Barker Podcast Collection. Please choose your podcast. Thank you. You have chosen the Oddcast Podcast UK. Initiate podcast. Enjoy the show.
It's the singing episode where we're going to sing everything we say. Out of tune and off key.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah.
Sing for yourself. I'm Adam.
I'm Will.
I'm Ash.
All very mellow.
We've just had hog roast.
We did. Will cooked some pork.
Yep.
Nice big bit of pork.
Serious lump of pork.
Walks in and he shoved his pork in my mouth. It was amazing.
Once again.
And then we had some dinner.
Yep. Did you enjoy your stuffing?
Oh, yeah. It was nice.
Yes, and you'll notice I had some quite pleasant white baps. Fuck me, there's a lot of jokes in a hog roast, but I can't do anything with the applesauce.
We are the Oddcast Podcast UK, part of the Barker Podcast Collection. Boom! Splat. So, there you go. Part of the Podgods Network as well. Don't forget those guys. The wider range of global podcasts taking over the world. Like NATO.
Yes, that's what NATO was set up to do.
It started off as, yeah, NATO started off as
a podcast group.
Group of podcasters.
Imagine. We can look it back, they've got a back catalogue. Stuff on Podbean or something.
They just armed themselves.
Yeah, afterwards. And we had a podcast nobody's listening to. Hashtag not listening.
Yeah.
Gosh. So how's everyone today? Everyone good?
Dandy. Okay.
Fine. It's one name episode, isn't it?
Yeah. Fine then.
Yeah, fine. If you're dandy and you're okay, fine.
Well, you've got to give us a leading question.
I know.
You
know?
You're just making this awkward. You've already asked how we are, and then you've done that again, and we're really, really making some progress here.
So we're really good, Dan.
Everyone's fine, all right?
Just get on with it, okay? Yeah. Fine. You're like one of them girls when the girls get the app. They're like, you alright? I'm fine. Fine. Yeah.
Do you mind if I go out for a couple of beers tonight? That's fine.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Thanks. Do you mind we get on with the podcast? That's fine. Fine. Go ahead. See if I care.
Ooh. Oh, thing is, when See If I Care comes out, you know. Thing is, sometimes, no, that's fine. You can just take it, but if they say, see if I care, ooh. You say, oh, shit.
Yeah,
need to redo my plans here.
Exactly. I'm going to go and sit in the corner and reevaluate what I've just said.
Would you like a foot massage?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I'll call someone over to do it. I'm off to the pub.
It's an age old joke, isn't it? Guy comes in and says, get your coat, love. Why? Going down to the pub. He goes, oh, I'm going to come with you. No, I'm turning the heating off.
Always like that.
Oh, a little bit of sexist joke. There you go. Bit of blue humour.
Not strictly sexist.
He's a little bit sexist.
He's saying he's sexist.
I'm not sexist.
He's saving money when he's not there.
Who's sexiest here?
They must be from Yorkshire.
Yeah. Who's sexiest here?
Sexiest?
Yeah.
I think it's a tie between all three of us.
Let's
get all equally. And there's a video where you see a tie between all three of us, but we won't go into that.
That's not on YouTube. That's
a different tube.
Yeah, another tube, which you probably all know. Another hub.
It's the podcast, the podcast, podcast, the podcast, podcast with Adam, Will and Ash.
The Oddcast Podcast UK, a podcast that makes you feel like you have a tampon stuck up your ass.
What the? No, cut! You know those baby on board signs you get in the back of cars? Yeah. Child on board and all that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do they send you into a spitting rage?
No.
No, but when you see someone driving along really, really badly that's got one in the window, it's just sort of, why?
I just want to know, if they've got a baby, right, and they've bought this baby on board sticker, do they take it off when the baby isn't on board?
Probably not.
No. So that's entirely redundant. Do you know why they were, why they came about in the first place?
So people would drive really close behind the back of the car so they could actually read the sign, so that if they braked hard, they'd drive in the back of it.
That was one of the reasons. But basically it was so that if they crashed their car, the emergency services would look for a baby. This was like before the invention of child seats and shit. So really, what the emergency services can do is rather than look at the sign on the car, they can look in the car and see if there's a child seat with a baby strapped in it, rather than back in the 70s when it was normal to have to check several hundred metres in front of the car where the baby had been projected out of it and through the windshield.
Or welcome to the comedy podcast on Cars Podcast UK.
But the point I'm getting at is these things, they wind me up. Have you seen, because it's gotten even worse. Now people don't know the reason behind them because they're fucking pointless in the first place. But then you have things like Princess on board and like Angler's Mail reader on board and just the most pointless drivel about these people's personal lives. Because what these signs are actually put in to do is not about the safety side. It's to say, look everyone, I have a baby! Oh, I am a princess, I have pink fluffy dice. And this is what really fucks me off. It's just, your life is dull and urbane. We don't need a sign about it.
Urbane?
Urbane.
What's that?
No, kind of dull, really.
Oh, yeah, cool. I like that word.
Yeah, okay.
It's a better word than dull, isn't it?
It's like when you're trying to think up a character in Batman.
Bane.
The Oddcast Podcast UK. It's the podcast nobody likes.
Cut. Well, you've all been reading the news and watching the news, and you can't get away from this story about that Oscar Pistorius guy.
Yeah.
It's a real porn star name, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it?
I am Oscar Pistorius. I am here to fix your swimming pool. Is it Oscar-sized?
Oscar-sized?
Well, he's being ostracised, to be
fair.
Well,
he is, isn't he?
Are we going to go on to the comedy aspect of him being tragically born with no feet and shooting the beautiful South African one, or are we going to
I just want to talk about it because I just...
Oh, that's fine.
It's mental. This guy, I mean, Oscar Pistorius, everyone knows who he is.
No, I'd never really heard of him. I didn't follow the Olympics and couldn't give a fuck about athletics.
Right, Paralympian, born with no legs. They call him the Blade Runner because he's got them blades on his legs.
But he ran in the proper human Olympics as well.
Proper human Olympics too. He did as well, Will. Well done. He loved that.
Yeah.
Oh, you evil bastard.
But, sorry, I do love cripples as well.
He was one of them people. He's he'd done the proper Olympics and the Paralympics. And he was like a massive star in the Paralympian world. He was like, he's pretty much David Beckham of the Paralympian world.
Oh, David Beckham could shoot posh in the face.
And obviously people will know, he ended up shooting his wife.
It's not his wife, it's his girlfriend.
His girlfriend, right. He shot his girlfriend. But what I want to talk
about... Which, under the Bible, is less of a sin.
Yeah. I don't want to sit there and make jokes about him not having a leg to stand on in trial or anything like that.
Because everyone in the world has fucking done that.
And I don't find it funny that he's killed someone. But what I do find amazing is that because he's such a high-profile celebrity, and he's not in his own world, right? And people love
South
him.
Africa,
South Africa, they love
the world of South Africa.
They love him out there, right? And people jump on celebrities in there. Like if a celebrity does something wrong, they will back him up, quitting them regardless. Michael Jackson touches kids,
another South
African, they back him up. Yeah, he was white. He was black.
Actually, that's quite a South African. Actually, I'm going to step away.
Stop it, Ash.
Yeah, that was Ash just stealing Will's voice.
What I wanted to say was that the minute it happened, right, people got onto social networks and onto the internet and that, and they come up with this elaborate story of it wasn't his fault. We thought it was an intruder. He thought it was a burglar.
That
he
might
didn't
be
do
what
it.
He told
he didn't
the police.
Do it. No, he didn't tell them anything. That what it was PR, air quotes, PR people, fans who wanted to save him before he got put thrown under the bus. And it's amazing. Someone just went, no, he didn't mean to do it. It was all an accident. Because the police came around and said, I don't know what this intruder story has come about. We've not heard of anything like that. He
turned
has not told
up,
us
we
anything.
We turned
like
up,
that.
We arrested a couple of blicks just to be safe, but it turned out that the blicks made him do it.
That's a South African thing. That's not a racist thing. Ash!
Fuck off.
But no, I just think it's amazing how quickly people will jump behind a celebrity they don't even know. Because straight away on Twitter and Facebook and any kind of social media, they were like, no, he didn't do it. He didn't do it. He was scared and he thought it was a burglar because South Africa has a really high rate of burglary. So he
and
thought
murder.
It was,
actually.
And then but everyone's like, actually, no, we've been here a few times on domestic abuse sort of claims and that. And everyone's like, oh.
Yeah, he was walking along. He got to the top of the stairs. His leg fell off. He dropped his gun. As it span down the stairs, it went off a couple of times and shot him in the face.
I think it's crazy that like this guy who was built up to be like the greatest Paralympian ever, just because he shoots his girlfriend. What sort of world do we live in?
He got a gold in Paralympics, didn't he?
He's got loads of gold in the Paralympics, yeah.
Okay. Shooting?
He was a big shooter. That's the thing, then people start putting all these like videos out of him shooting. Like, and putting out a tweet that you put out like, a couple of months back saying,
I'm going to shoot my girlfriend in the face.
No, he said something about like, oh yeah, I got 97 shots on target today at shooting practice. I'm really good. And I'm like, no! Just let the guy go on trial. He's going to get done because it's obvious what he's done. People are going
to This
make
is
jokes.
The point at which you say he hasn't got a leg to stand on. But it's ironic because he just lacks feet. He's got knees and everything, so he has got legs.
I'll be honest, it scares me that somebody can be so well loved for so long and then do something so heinous.
Now then.
Well, there you go.
It's a person. People are capable of all kinds of crap.
Which I understand.
And it doesn't matter whether they're a celebrity or not, they can still be wankers.
It's true. And I think a lot of more celebrities are wankers than normal people.
So it's irrespective of who he is, he shot his girlfriend. Enough.
Anyway, on to the funny.
Hey!
The Oddcast Podcast UK, a show that makes sawing off your right arm seem more appealing.
No, cut.
Have you seen this documentary on the BBC where they're filming all the penguins and they've put robot penguin cameras in with their herds of penguins?
Yes.
I don't know if herd is the right word.
And all that kind of stuff. It's the hidden cameras.
Well, it's the rock. They've got these rock hop. They've got three different types of penguins. The rockhopper penguins, the emperor penguins, which are the ones at the North Pole, and then the other kind of, South Pole even, and then the other penguins that I can't fucking remember the names of. But they've got these fucking, like, basically they've strapped a penguin body, not a real one, a fake penguin body, because strapping a dead penguin to a remote control car would be probably frowned upon by general BBC viewers. But
by penguins.
Yeah.
Penguins wouldn't give a shit. I've seen video footage of a duck raping another dead duck.
Nice. What the bloody, where did you find that?
It was on the register. I wasn't searching
for it. It
was
on Animal Tube.
It was on the sex register.
I wasn't searching for it. It was scientific notes.
Right, okay.
Just to, I must admit, that sounded terrible.
It did. I was just Googling the other day.
I like
was having a wank on my special necrobestiality site. Flogging a dead horse.
And anyway,
they've got these basically remote control penguins with cameras in their faces and stuff, and then they've got these egg cams. So what they're doing, they're videoing all the penguins up at the breeding grounds and nesting sites. So you see this like robotic penguin go along, and all the other penguins like trying to mate with it and everything. And then it's like, and the first egg is laid by rockhopper cam, and it's like, chunk, and this egg with a camera in bed, it's like a stone egg comes out, and all the other penguins go, fuck me, she's slack. it's actually fascinating because they're saying some of these penguins, they can't get the close up footage of, have never been able to before they invented remote control penguins. But I just really enjoyed that. Have you seen it?
I've seen the adverts for it. I haven't actually seen the program yet.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's something that I was going to. It was on my to watch list.
I'm just picturing the scene from Batman Returns. when he has a penguin with machine guns and...
It's totally like that. It's totally like that. But I tell you what, it's got to be a much better bit of television. The other bit of television I heard about, and I haven't watched this, but I bet Adam has, and that's Splash. Celebrity yes. Diving. What the fuck is wrong with this country? I mean, you've got Tom Daly, right, who is an Olympic diver, a fair play to him, but he's teaching Z-list celebrities to jump into a swimming pool for the entertainment of the masses. It's a swimming pool. There's nothing good about this. There's no high concept here. It's proper fucking ITV bollocks.
Is he teaching them how to do a professional level bomb?
Basically. Well, yeah, you watched it. I bet you enjoyed it, didn't you, Adam?
No, I fucking didn't.
So why did you watch it? You're the sort of scumbag that pushes up the ratings and keeps this stuff on telly.
I don't know. I thought it was Dance on Ice but melted version.
Oh, now that would be funny. Celebrity ice skating on an actual thin ice lake type thing. And it just might be unlucky that they actually crack and fall through.
Celebrity thin ice.
It'd be like Wipeout, but on ice and very random.
And if they're down, they die.
Yeah.
I want to see Dancing
on
Fire.
They just get taken out and never allowed on telly again.
I want to see Dancing on Fire. Celebrity couples get together and dance. If they're shit, they get set on fire.
We'll can sit here all day. Celebrity.
Yeah. Sugar. Bring on the wall. It's got spikes.
Celebrity hole in the wall. Change. There is no hole.
Celebrity hole in the wall. It's a glory hole. And on the other side, there may be a beautiful celebrity. There may be a tiger. Rottweiler. There may be hungry rats.
Or celebrity animal. You just get them and you just stick them in this little cage and fill it with...
Brick it up, yeah.
Their face sticking out the concrete with two little hands.
Hand Solo.
Yeah, but their face is still out so they can still sort of talk and yabber and stuff. And
no. Brick torture. Up the face or just pour plaster of Paris in their mouth.
The Oddcast Podcast UK. The podcast that makes you want to reevaluate what you do in your spare time. Huh.
Cut. Okay, interview time again. So we get to have a little break for half an hour. I recently chatted to Paul Tanner, director of the Fall of the Essex Boys. You know the Essex Boys and all that? The story of the Range Rover.
Yeah, there's six movies on it.
What with having lived in Essex all of our life.
There you go.
Never heard of it.
The Rettendon murders. Range Rover murders. Have you ever met anybody that knows somebody who knows somebody who probably was standing next to somebody once who talked
totally,
to
totally, and I did live near the hospital with the clown with the shotgun in the flowers, because that was the unit in Billericay, and I lived just round the corner from that, so that was all over the local free papers, because something actually happened in Billericay.
Yeah, there you go. Rettendon's not that far. It's just outside Chelmsford, isn't it? Down past Hanningfield.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Scary. Happened in 95. So, yeah, and they've made another movie about it. Another... turn, because nobody knows what actually happened. All so many different
people
stories.
People got shot
and they don't know who did it, and they're thinking these people did it. People have been put in prison and whatnot.
Do people outside of Essex give a fuck about it?
I don't know. Well, they might.
Did everybody in Essex give a fuck about it?
I think give a fuck is a strong term, but the movies are probably good.
Yeah, a couple of them have been quite good.
So this one, they take a different approach to it. But, he's open,
yeah, he reversed the Range Rover. Yeah,
what if the Essex Boy murders were set in Calcutta?
Yeah.
Essex Boys goes Bollywood. Fuck yeah!
They just wanted to go and film it in a hot country.
All right, boys, shall we go for a curry?
You fucking slay. But, so I had a chat with him about the movie, which is out now on DVD and Blu-ray. So here we go. Paul Tanner chat. Me, him, Google Hangout. Go.
Only six people know what really happened that night. Three of them are dead. Two of them are in prison. But if you think you know what happened, think again.
Out on my
so if the crime doesn't pay, eh, Mickey? Ah!
Sure you want to go this far?
Do whatever it takes to bring these Essex boys down.
We both know there's only one way to beat them.
So, Paul Santa, how you doing, mate? You alright?
Yeah, very well, thank you, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, really, really good. Finally, we got the chat. We had this arranged about a month ago.
We did, yeah. Sorry, I've been doing night shoots at the moment, so it's been kind of, you know, hectic. You know, when your day is night, then everyone else is sleeping when you're at work, and then you get in, and you've got a sort of 2 or 3 hour window when other people are up and you're up, and try and get all your work done in that time with them. Yeah. So anyway, sorry about that. I'm free now, so I'm glad to be able to speak now. Anyway,
you're busy man.
Be a bit more awake for it as well.
Yeah, we're like, oh, we'll do it really early in the morning. We're like, nah, I don't want to.
Wait till a bit later. Wasn't that one of my suggestions? Yeah, let's do it at 7:30 in the morning, just after I finish the 12-hour day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what are you doing night shifts at the moment? Are you working on another film?
Yeah, doing one called, like an SAS hostage-type movie called He Who Dares. Okay. So it's kind of, British independent version of Die Hard, something like that, kind of hostages get taken and SAS team has to go in and rescue them and stuff. So it's lots of shooting and martial arts fights and that kind of thing. So it's exciting stuff, but it's like, you know, it's the whole film set at night, so we've had to do, you know, a lot of night shoots. So it's been pretty exhausting, really. But it's shaping up well, so yeah, I'm looking forward to getting that one into the edit.
Oh, that'd be cool. Did you write that?
A guy called James Crowe wrote it. He also wrote GBH that I produced last year. Me and Simon Phillips kind of gave him a sort of outline for the story, and he went off and wrote it. And you know, we kind of rejigged some things on set, but something that he wrote the original script for, and I've directed, and Simon is the lead in, and actor called Tom Knight, who we recently used in White Collar Hooligan 2, is my lead SAS guy. So yeah, it's been shaping up very well. It's nice to be busy, you know, making films. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Living the dream.
Exactly, yeah. You know, too often people are just kind of talking about making them a lot of the time rather than just getting on and actually doing it. So it's nice to just be, you know, it's nice to be working.
Yeah, definitely. So the film we're going to talk about today is a film that's out on DVD, be out now, the 18th of February.
Which I think is this Monday, isn't it?
So when this goes out, it should be out.
Yes, it will be out, yeah, on DVD and Blu-ray, yeah.
Cool, so explain what that is.
So it's The Fall of the Essex Boys, which is a story. It's a film about the three drug dealers who gangsters who were found dead in a Range Rover in Rettenden near Chelmsford in 1995 and have been gunned down by persons unknown. There's been some other films, you know, out there already that have kind of touched on this subject or in some cases kind of covered it a lot, but you know, we've got kind of a new take on it. We look at it from a slightly new and fresh perspective. One thing we definitely do is we kind of we look at the police's involvement in it a lot more, and the sort of the potential of what their involvement with the whole thing was. And it's very much from the perspective of Darren Nichols, the guy who is he's now living like an alternate life, like in witness protection for being a supergrass and turning in these two guys who are now serving life sentences for the murders of these guys, but who still to this day protest their innocence. So yeah, it's set in 1995 and kind of it charts like the kind of rise to power of these three guys and how they were, you know, increasing their grip on the drugs industry or the drugs trade in the east of England and kind of what led to their downfall really and what led ultimately to their deaths.
So it's like a period film then, 20 years ago.
It is actually a period film. You know, you say to someone period piece and they think bonnets and corsets and that kind of thing. But honestly, you know, anything that's sort of more than 10 years old and suddenly you're having to make sure all the cars in your scenes are from that era. Your costume designer's got to make sure everyone's wearing the right stuff. Haircuts have to reflect the time, you know. And then, you know, if you were doing something in the 60s and you were filming on a street, all those satellite dishes, you know, up on the walls, you can't be seeing them. You know, that's a job. You've either got to frame them out or paint them out later. So, yeah, it's actually a period piece, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, one that, you know, people still recognise. You know, it's sort of, you know, 95 mobile phones were just, you know, starting to be used by people with money. You know, there wasn't really internet or anything like that. But it's still a very much a recognisable, you know, a very recognisable world that we all live in. Yeah.
So, how true to life is the film? Like, how many true elements you've got for it? Because there's already been other movies based on the shootings.
Yeah, yeah.
You had Essex Boys and Rise of the Foot Soldier. Where does this one kind of sit with them, or does it take a completely different sort of twist on it, sort of a different stance?
Well, I mean, it features a lot of, you know, a lot of real life people, and obviously there are some characters in there that have been kind of put in, or incidents that have been put in or embellished for dramatic license, because you know, otherwise we'd be making a documentary. Hmm. But the thing is, with something like this, is it's very difficult to know which version, if any, is the true account. You know, so each film is always from a slightly different perspective, and has different elements added to it. I mean, the one thing that we do in this film is that the other ones haven't done is we've kind of made the case that actually the guys who are currently serving time for those murders actually weren't the ones that did it. In the other films, it's kind of pretty much a given that Jack Worms and Billy Steele were the people who actually killed, you know, Pat Tate, Craig Roth, and Tony Tucker. But in our one, we've kind of gone down a different route and said, actually, it very most likely wasn't them. It could have been someone else. And I don't want to give away too much about who we potentially say it could have been. But you know, that is one thing that we've done that's very different in this film. Yeah.
Okay. So how did the research go with that? Did you get to speak to many people? Was it more like a lot of different sort of research that you heard from word of mouth of people, or?
There's so many people who claim to have met the guys who were in that Range Rover. It's unbelievable. Anytime you're in a cab in London or you're in a bar in Essex and this story comes up, they'll kind of look around and go, well, actually, you know, I knew one of their cousins. You know, I did a bit of business for them. It's amazing how many people apparently have had some kind of connection to them. So the thing is, there's there's a lot of myth and folklore about them, and not a lot of what you could call verifiable information. Having said that, there is, you know, some there is some books out there by the guys who kind of ran in their circles, you know, which I think were sort of a basis for the kind of the research that went into the script. But the thing is, you know, you kind of have to take sometimes things with a bit of a pinch of salt and a bit of dramatic license, unfortunately. You know, it's as time goes on and kind of memories become blurred and more people involved with that, you know, with those incidents kind of pass on, then more and more myth will be created and, you know, there'll be, you know, bigger legends kind of like claimed by people, I suppose. So it's very difficult to kind of like, you know, sort the fact and the fiction there, really. But I think in some ways that can actually, you know, that means you can make a kind of bigger and better and more exciting film, because you can take some kind of, you can take some slight liberties with dramatic license. I mean, in some instances, you know, we actually, we try to be a bit kind of respectful of certain historical things. Like one of the catalysts in the film for their downfall is they bring in a batch of dodgy ecstasy, and a young girl takes one and very sadly dies from it. Now, this is actually what happened in 1995, and the young girl was Leah Betts. Yeah. But we wanted to kind of, you know, like whilst we were going down the road of real life, we didn't want to, you know, be disrespectful to Betts' family and kind of like put her name in it for the sake of getting publicity or whatever. So we changed the name and changed the character and said, okay, well, that will be a slightly more fictionalized version. So, you know, you've got to kind of balance the pros and the cons there of merging fact and fiction, I guess.
I mean, going back to like people saying that they knew that people have, oh, I know this person and this guy knows this guy who knew this guy. I mean, I knew a guy who knew a guy who actually had the Range Rover after it was used. And he said that they had to clean it out, and it, when they were doing the whole washing the blood with everywhere, and you're like, oh, really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. You see, if someone said that to me, my first words out of my mouth would be, bullshit. Yeah,
exactly.
Bullshit. Exactly. He had a Range Rover.
Yeah,
I mean, this guy who told you this, did he seem believable? Because I can't believe that the police would let the Range Rover go after
exactly. It was... He's one of them Billy bullshitters in the pub. You know, the guy that's always got a story.
Yeah.
But honestly, you always meet someone like that. You just humour them. You're like, oh, of course you did, mate. Yeah, of course you did.
Yeah, yeah. When we were filming it, like, you know, we were shooting on, you know, in various locations in Essex, And, you know, people have come up, like, oh, what are you filming? And you tell them. And as soon as you say the title, you know, like most of the times when you say, when you say the name of the film that you're filming, you know, what are you filming? Oh, White Collar Hooligan. They go, I've never heard of it. Yeah, that's because it's, you know, not made yet, you know. But in this case, we go, Fall of the Essex Boys. And you hear the words Essex Boys and you kind of know, you know, what the film's probably going to touch upon. And as soon as we'd say that, a lot of people would go, oh, really? And then they'll go into a story of how they used to drink with the guys or they hid a gun for one of them or something like that. And you think, man, these guys must have met a lot of people. You know, it's kind of like the, you know, it's like all the people who claim to be at Woodstock or something like that. If all the people actually who claim to be there were there, you know, that part of, you know, it would have sunk into the earth because it would have had too many people on it. So the amount of times I've met people who say they met them or worked with them or whatever, you know, and the thing is, you know, because there's so many people who say that, you can never tell which one's truthful and which one's not.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of interesting because then you get to pick and choose what you believe and you kind of piece it all together, have your own sort of view on it.
Totally, yeah.
I mean, for any listeners out there, there'd be some listeners that actually have no idea what Essex Boys is. They have no idea what actually happened. Have a quick explanation of the events that we know, save from the news. Not like your story or the Essex Boys story, or anything. Just what actually happened that normal folk would know.
Okay, so the facts that would have been, you know, on the news at the time would be three guys who were after police, you know, who the police knew to be local hard men, gangsters, drug dealers, were found dead, shot with shotguns in a Range Rover in a field in near Chelmsford in Rettington in Essex. And the investigation into it revealed that they were probably going there to try and rip off a drugs drop. A plane was going to come in and land from Holland, and they were going to try and rip off the drugs and kill the people who were picking the drugs up. And there was a big investigation into it, and two guys, Jack Wones and Mickey Steele, were tried and convicted of their murders. Now, to this day, those two guys have always protested their innocence. I'm not going to say whether I think they did it or whether I think they didn't do it, but, you know, normally when people get banged up, they kind of hold their hands up and go, okay, right, fine, it's a fair cop. But these guys have always protested their innocence, and they still, there's an ongoing appeals process, which I know was in the news the other day that they're still doing. So those are kind of the facts of it. Now, what is also a fact is the fact that their ecstasy they brought in, as they were bringing it in, they were pissing off a lot of other drug dealers and gangsters, and their batch of E was the one that ultimately killed that young girl whose father was a police officer. So those are the facts. Now, from those facts, you can kind of take various angles and various spins and go down various avenues with stories and ideas and that kind of thing. But those there are kind of the facts that, that were investigated and reported at the time, in a nutshell.
So it's very open-ended. I mean, that's how, like...
Totally, yeah. I mean, to some it's like an open and shut thing because the two guys have been banged up, but for a lot of people, that's actually just the start of the story, you know, and if you believe that they've been wrongly convicted, as a lot of people do, then there's a whole other story there. And in that case, you have to wonder who actually did do it, and whoever is responsible is therefore still out there and at large. And if they didn't do it and someone else did do it, then someone knows who did it, but they're still at the loose, you know, I guess.
That's the interesting point. I think that's what makes watching the film more interesting, the fact that you don't know kind of what angle it's going to take and like
exactly
what you're going to get from it.
Totally. And with our one, you know, we did do the, you know, we took the approach of looking at the police's side of things. You know, you've got the police investigation into the Essex Boys and, you know, asking, you know, kind of what did they know and what, you know, what was their involvement in it. Hopefully it's kind of like a slightly, you know, fresh new perspective. But also, you know, it's very, very much told through the eyes of Darren Nichols, as I say, who's kind of, who now has a reputation as a super grass who turned in a lot of people. But, you know, even with his story and his identity, and again, I don't want to give anything away here, kind of, you know, plot and twist-wise, but there is kind of like a big question mark hanging over his involvement and what he knew. I can't really say too much about that without giving away a twist in the film, but, you know, watch it and you'll see what I mean.
Okay. So what made you want to write about this and direct this? What sort of, like...
Oh, this wasn't one that I wrote. This was written by a very talented writer, Stephen Reynolds, who did a lot of research into the... the Essex Boys murders. I think he sort of read all the books and came up with this, you know, with a very interesting spin on it. So, kudos to the script for him. What made me want to direct it was a challenge, you know. I mean, like, to be honest, when I was offered the job, I did think, there's been some other Essex Boys films before. This is kind of there's a big shadow kind of looming over this. There's like a high watermark to live up to. Because the other films are very good. You know, Rise of the Foot Soldier, I think it's a fantastic film. And it's, you know, Julian Gilbert's done an awesome job there. He's one of my favourite directors and did a great job with it. Wonder by Blood, I don't think quite lived up to Rise of the Foot Soldier, but it's still an awesome film. Mm. At that point, I hadn't actually seen the original Essex Boys film with Sean Bean, but I since watched it. And again, you know, they did a great job there as well. They did fictionalise a lot of it. But for me, the challenge was to try and do something a bit different to those, you know, which are kind of how we did. You know, we did with our whole approach to it. I tried to do a slightly different take on things artistically. I mean, one thing, you know, like obviously in real life, all those guys were found dead in a Range Rover in winter in a very snowy field. And so the thing is, as soon as you see the Range Rover covered in blood, surrounded by snow, the very iconic image, isn't it? So, like, you know, and you kind of associate it with those other films. So I tried to do things a little bit different by just doing dramatic license there and going, you know what, let's have them getting shot under a load of rain rather than in the snow, because, you know, it will look nice. Well, look nice, people getting killed. But, you know, visually it will be very nice to look. And it will be something a bit different to the other ones, you know. And hopefully this film's a bit more sort of performance led by the actors playing their various characters. I mean, Peter Barrett is, you know, absolutely awesome in this film as Pat Tate. You know, that's something else you kind of have to do a bit differently. The other films always had like a very big guy playing Pat Tate, who was this sort of 20 stone steroid laden, you know, I don't say nutter, but you know, like the guy was, you know, full of rage and like was massive and you know, people feared him because of his size. And Pete Barrett is not a big guy, so you know. It was great to kind of work with the actors on the way they play their characters, and Pete ended up just delivering an awesome performance as this feral cokehead who could flip any second, and you know, and you do genuinely fear the guy. So you know, there's various creative things, you know, performances from actors and that kind of thing, but it did kind of like, you know, that were a great appeal to me for this. Also, the cast that was attached to it and that we accumulated as we kind of went through pre-production was fantastic. I'd never worked with, you know, Rob Kavanagh, Kirsten Waring, who people would know from the other films, Tony Denham, you know, Kate McGowan. These were people I'd never worked before and jumped at the chance to work with, and I was very glad I got the opportunity to do so.
It's an impressive cast, this. When I looked it up on IMDb and that, and sort of been looking at, like, keeping up with what's going on with it, it's a lot of, like, very, a lot of up-and-comers, but then there's ones that you've, like I said, you've worked with before. The one that I'm most interested in is the Kirsten Waring one, because I think she's a great actress. She's been in some of my favourite TV shows and films that I've seen recently. I mean, was it easy to get her to come on board?
You know, it was, and I was amazed because we did like a couple of days of auditions in London for various roles, like some of the police roles some of the main roles that we auditioned people for. And Kirsten actually came in and auditioned for this role. Like, it wasn't, you know, that her agent approached us and said she would like the role. She came in and auditioned for it. And, you know, for me, that was impressive that she was going to come in and do that anyway. But she came in and just nailed it at the audition. And, you know, when we offered her the role, we did say, you know, this is kind of your role, really, isn't it? You know, it's kind of the character she's played in the other films, but, you know, she's bringing something slightly different to it in this one anyway. So I was amazed, actually, how kind of easy it was to get her on board the project. Amazed and very pleased, because, yeah, as you say, she's a brilliant actress. I mean, BAFTA-nominated actress. And, just fantastic to work with. Very pleased.
So what sort of locations were you shooting the film at?
It was a variety of locations. We were mainly in London, Essex, and of course we did a brief stint in Amsterdam as well for a couple of scenes over there. So yeah, it was mainly kind of places in and around London and Essex. You know, there was like strip club in Ealing and we went down to Portsmouth as well for we did some stuff out of boat and at docks, which was down at Portsmouth. So we kind of got all over the place, but we were in Essex a lot of the time, like, you know, the fields and countryside was all Essex based. We actually went to Rettingham to do a couple of shots there. We were in Basildon one day. I'm struggling to think. Yeah, I mean, like, we were kind of all over the place. London and Essex mainly, but yeah, we did a few days in Amsterdam as well.
Oh, that was cool.
Yeah, no, it was very nice. I've shot there before for a couple of other films actually, and it was very, they're always very, it's weird that they're never bothered by people filming. They just seem to be just kind of sat around in a daze. I can't work out what it is.
Fair enough.
but shooting in Amsterdam is, you know, it's always good. It's always nice. To kind of like break out of the of just being in the UK for stuff, kind of opens the film up a bit, you know, makes it feel a bit bigger, and it definitely did in this case. I shot a couple of things in New York recently, and that was just awesome, and did something else in Spain as well, and it really gives your film a lot of production value, just going, going to another country, and it definitely did here. You know, went to Amsterdam and did some scenes down by the canals, and then there's a scene inside a warehouse, which was, of course, shot in the UK, but was set in Amsterdam as well, which is one of our big action set pieces of the film, which is like a kind of raid and a shootout in a warehouse, which went very well as well. So, yeah, I was very pleased with our locations for this. Also, just to say, actually, you know, you were talking about some of the up-and-comers we kind of had in this. Yeah, I would want to add on that. It was nice to have, I worked with, there was kind of three sorts of... you know, people I kind of work with on this. There was people I worked with before. So that's like Nick Nevin, who's very underrated, Simon Phillips, and Pete Barrett. Worked with them before. It was always great to have those guys on because, like, you know, I totally know what to expect from them, and they always bring the goods. And then there was sort of, bigger seasoned names like Kirsten Waring and Kate McGowan and Tony Denham and Rob Kavanagh, and they were awesome to work with as well because, you know, they've got so many years of experience behind them. They just kind of know exactly what he's doing. And then there was young people I'd never worked with before, Jay Brown playing Tony Tucker. Great, you know, really great experience working with him, you know, and like the guy is so good in his performance. Like you do, you know, like again, it's almost like Pete Barrett, but kind of scale back slightly. You know, you kind of think that guy can just flip any second and just take you down. And then there was some guys in slightly smaller roles, Joe Stamp and Ryan Winsley. They were very good as well, I think, Warren, I mentioned. So, I was very pleased there. And of course, Ewan Ross, who I'd worked with before on a couple of other things. He was playing Bill Stone. So, very happy with all the performances of all my actors there. Very pleased.
Good. Good. So what can we expect from you next? I mean, like I said, you're doing the SAS Die Hard film, which sounds pretty amazing. So what else have you got in the pipeline?
So we've got Essex Boys coming out on the 18th, and then in May I've got White Collar Hooligan 2 coming out, so that's a sequel to The Rise and Fall of the White Collar Hooligan, which was out last year, it did quite well, it did quite good business, so there was sufficient demand there for a sequel, so we came back with a lot of the same characters, and this was one of the ones that we did in New York as well as Spain. So, it was nice to kind of go international with the story. And that's getting a release in May. I'm very much looking forward to that one coming out because I'm very proud of it. You know, it's nice to, I've done stuff before where I've kind of gone back and revisited characters with the Jack films, and it was nice to, you know, it was nice to do a sequel, but with different characters, you know, so Nick Nevin comes back, Simon Phillips comes back, and Rita Amnani come back, all in the same characters. So it's Pete Barrett as well. But we've got a load of new people in as well. Vaz Blackwood from Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels is one of my characters. Tony Denham, who's also an Essex Boys, who's in the Football Factory, he's one of my main guys. And Neil Large as well, who's like an up-and-comer we used in GBH before as well. So I'm very pleased with that. You know, like as I say, we've got to go to New York and shoot a load of stuff there, like in Times Square. So, like, you know, it looks great. And I think, you know, people are going to enjoy that one. And then, so then apart from that, yeah, we got, yeah, White Collar 2, and while we're in New York, I also did a film out there called Shame the Devil, which is a serial killer film. About a detective who's tracking a serial killer between London and New York. So there's that as well. And yeah, just been doing He Who Dares at the moment. So and I've still got I've got a couple of days of pickups on He Who Dares left to do. So we'll be finishing that off. And then after that, you know, I hate to sound wanky, and because like I hate when people say this and go, well, I've got a few things that are kind of happening. But you know, the thing is, we tend to, you know, I've got a couple of things that are potentials, but until one of them goes, I won't know which one will be going until it happens. So
okay.
Yeah, there's a few things, one of which I've written and one of which I haven't written but would direct, you know, so we'll see. We'll see what else will happen. But yeah, the next thing after Essex Boys is White Collar 2 in May.
Very exciting. So you're a busy man, proper busy man.
Yeah, we try to be busy. You know, as I said, it's kind of like nice to be, you know, it's nice to always be making films rather than just kind of like, you know, talking about it. So, you know, we just kind of try and get on. We just try and press on as much as we can and just get on and do it, really.
And that's what I like about what you guys do and the people I speak to on these sort of films and that, and how you keep getting them done. You put a lot of effort into them. You put a lot of passion into it and that, and you get them all out there, and it works, and people want more, people demand for more. So you're on a good train. It's going well.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're lucky that we've kind of hit a bit of a stride at the moment, and Simon, the producer of these films, is, you know, very much a driving force behind that. He's very sort of prolific and good at making these things happen. So, you know, I'm very lucky to work with him, and as I said, Rita Ramnani as well, who, you know, is one of the best actresses I've ever worked with. And Peter Barrett and Nick Nevin, you know, we kind of got like a good little team there. And it's always good to kind of press on and just get on with making movies, really.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, I'm looking forward to Essex Boys. I'm really looking forward to White Collar Hooligan 2.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to He Who Dares as well. I just want to say, I like you as a director as well. I like your style and I like the way you do it. So, I mean, I'm impressed. I hope the listeners and the viewers now are watching this and listening to this, go out there and like give it a go. Because, you know, like you said, you can get people out there which are kind of like, oh, never heard of it. And then if they feel like they've never heard of something, then it must be bad. You're like, well, no, you know, put a bit of research in, go in there, give it a go, watch something.
Yeah, I think, you know, people shouldn't be afraid to, you know, to road test British independent films, because there's a lot of good stuff out there that, you know, you can unearth a jewel and find something good. And if you do find something that you enjoy, then seek out the other stuff by those same people. I mean, you know, as you say, you know, I mean, we had, you know, we've had people sort of, you know, discovering White Collar Hooligan, you know, which was our one from last year. Or, you know, the film that I produced that Simon directed, GBH, that was something else. You know, that seems to be kind of a slow burner with people. You know, not as many people heard of GBH at the time as they did White Collar Hooligan, but they're kind of discovering it via White Collar Hooligan. And so I hope that ultimately, you know, when Essex Boys comes out and when White Collar 2 comes out and that subsequent stuff come out, you know, people who, you know, maybe go, well, you know, I'm not really that into British independent film. You know, they might see one of them, they might see something they like and go, oh yeah, I'll give that a go. And then from that, they'll discover other stuff, you know, that we've done or that other people have done, you know, of the same ilk. But as I say, there is a lot of good stuff out there. And, you know, try not to let yourself get spoiled by Hollywood too much. There's a lot of homegrown talent who are, you know, putting in a lot of hard work and producing some good stuff. So, you know, give it a go. You might be pleasantly surprised.
Yep, 100% agree with that one. So, before we go, is there any like way people can sort of follow you on Twitter or follow your movies and anything like that?
Yeah.
Keep contact.
Yes. Yeah. If you are so inclined to follow me on Twitter, then I'm at Paul Tanter. And then there are various Twitter handles for all of the films that we do. So yeah, White Collar Hooligan and White Collar Hooligan 2 has got Hooligan Film. He Who Dares has got one, and yeah, all the other ones we do. So yeah, if you like the films that we do, then yeah, give me a follow at Paul Tanter, and follow Simon Phillips at Cy Phillips 1980 and Rita Ramnani at Rita Ramnani, and then all the other people, Nick Nevin, you'll find him, he's all over Twitter, he's got a massive following already, give him a follow. And yeah, check out, you know, have a have a look on Facebook for the films as well, because they've got Facebook pages, and just keep an eye out for the trailers, because when they come out, we'll just be promoting the shit out of them. So, yeah, give us a follow and keep an eye out.
Definitely. All right, okay.
So that's it, Paul.
Awesome. Thank you very much, mate. Cheers. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, man. Thank you.
That's all right.
The Oddcast Podcast UK. The podcast that...
No, cut.
So listen to the podcasts. They're a bunch of fucking assholes. We don't know why you have to listen, but you do.
Hey, this is Brian.
This is Tony.
And we're the Salty Language Podcast.
You betcha.
Part of the Pod Gods Network.
Yep.
Find
all our goodness at saltylanguage.com.
Right, or on podgodsnetwork.com.
Exactly.
Our podcast, we cover all sorts of stuff. Weird news, geek news, movies.
Sexy time.
Comic books. Yeah, basically we're two guys who've been friends for like 1,000 years.
Yeah, we make fun of everything and everybody. Nobody's safe.
Yep. So if you're into that kind of thing, you know, we're definitely a not safe for work podcast. So, you know, if you like funny, you like silly, all that kind of stuff, you know, give us a listen.
Oh, for sure.
Again, you know, that's saltylanguage.com.
Right on.
Podcastnetwork.com.
Have a beer, you'll be fine.
The Oddcast Podcast UK. The podcast that gives you gas.
Cut. So, Ash.
Yeah.
What's happened to you recently?
Well, I think we possibly talked about my ankle in a previous one. and the saga continues.
Episode 6.
Yeah.
A new ankle.
In case no one's listened to it before, I now have it's certainly had surgery on it.
You've got like a bionic ankle.
No, unfortunately, they didn't actually replace it or put anything in it, so I'm not going to set off metal detectors at airports or anything like that.
But you had broken the fucker, hadn't you?
I'd broken it in two places.
And you're walking around.
And walking in the back garden and...
Yeah.
On the train, at work, on the stairs.
Four places.
That's true.
Yeah, no, I'd actually done it quite some serious damage in the end.
Fucking hardcore, mate. Didn't even notice.
Yeah, no, I had some keyhole surgery last week, and I might even get the video next week. Yay!
Can we put that out?
We will. I think
when is the video? Is that like through the keyhole surgery camera?
It'll
thing?
Be through Lloyd the camera. That they,
he's like, whose ankle is this?
Now, who would jump off a garage like this? Oh, another one the Americans aren't going to get the reference to.
Sorry.
Yeah, so he actually removed two pieces of broken off bone from my ankle, which I've been walking on for.
Do you get to
weeks.
Keep them?
No. I was hoping
that'd be like a trophy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, in a little tiny little jar.
I wasn't quite with it when I came round to ask him for the bits. I was wondering if, you know, on the films and stuff, when they remove a bullet and they drop it in that little kidney dish and it goes ka-ching, ching, ching. I was wondering if that'd come out on the video with that noise.
I must admit, quite a lot of years ago, I've got a scar on my elbow because I hit a mate at school over the head with one of those soft biology books just in jest. So he turned around and shoved me just in jest and my elbow went through a window. And I ended up with 10 stitches, including two sort of permanent sutures inside. But I was being sewn up on the operating table. I had to lie on my front so he could get to my elbow because it's sort of at the back bit where elbows
normally are.
Usually are, yeah.
But somehow the surgeon knocked the table once he'd finished sewing me up. I've been dripping a lot of blood into this sort of kidney bowl and it, like, reversed butterside, basically landed butterside down, so to speak. But the blood had just congealed nicely and it literally just hit the floor and went splat and stayed there. It was like you dropped jam. Or jelly. Not jello. Yeah, that's a different thing. But that was just my input to this conversation.
Disgusting.
I thought quite cool.
You need a fucking clotty blood.
So when I had my head sewn up a few years ago...
What?
I fainted and had my blood drank by a horse. I'm sure I've mentioned this before.
Something happened in jest again?
No, basically, I was holding the horse for my sister's horse. Yeah, in jest, all right. And I fainted. I was dehydrated from drinking the previous night. I had a cigarette, had a head rush, and just bang, hit the deck. But I cracked my head on the way down. But it was my brother that made me laugh on that one, because he came to the A&E with me while they stitched up the back of my head, and the surgeon goes, oh, you might want to look away from this. This will be quite unpleasant. And he goes, no, I'm watching this. And sort of leans in.
I want to see this.
Totally.
I want to see the gash.
I want to see Will's gash.
I want to see Will's gash.
The Oddcast Podcast UK. The podcast that... makes me happy.
No, cut.
Armageddon nearly happened in Russia the other week.
Yeah.
Meteor shower.
Ah! It wasn't a shower. It was one.
A bath. Sprinkle.
Meteor sprinkle. It was one meteor.
Was it one meteor?
It was one meteor.
That broke into a load of little ones?
It did, eventually.
Well, basically, the moment it passes through the Earth's atmosphere, I believe it's then a meteorite.
Ooh. Hmm. All right, Brian Cox.
Yes. Yes,
it Professor is. Brian Cox, I say.
Again, my thing is, again, one of those references the Americans get. To be honest, they probably just thought you insulted me. Brian Cox.
What happened? Because Ash is our go-to man when it comes to science and astronauts and physics and NASA and meteor rights. Meteor's rights. We want rights!
It came down with a little placard, but it was going so fast that it burnt up and a little bit of cardboard fell off. That's what went through a window and hurt 500 people.
Paper cut.
Did you know that two meteor wrongs don't make a meteor right?
Fucking hell.
I don't know. I can't believe I just said that.
I'm not cutting that bit out. Staying in. So, Ash, what happened? Come on.
It was really good. All the videos were really quite cool.
Yeah, they were pretty cool. You've seen them, haven't you?
I don't know. I'm still focusing on the meteor rungs. No, I haven't. The only one I've seen is the version on beta.com where they've painted it as a giant pink cock in the sky and you see this meteor, right, fly through from this white cloud and it just looks like a massive sort of...
Spunk,
yes. That's the only version I've seen.
Nice.
That's the only one you're ever going to see.
That's all I need.
That is definitely a meteor rung.
Yeah. It was meaty, all right.
Oh my god!
So Ash, bring it back.
But anyway, no, it would have broken up quite late on.
Yeah,
because it just gets stupidly hot going at whatever it was when it broke up 117,000 miles an hour.
Smaller and smaller and smaller.
It does, and then it cracks.
A tiny little pebble.
And yeah, but it was. They haven't worked out what it was that caused all the windows to blow out, whether it's actually going through the sound barrier, which it should have actually already done at stupidly high altitude, but it was probably the impact.
Ooh.
Well, it's sonic boom. Yeah, it landed in, boom. Supposedly it landed in a lake.
Guile out of Street Fighter 2.
Hadouken!
No, that
is
was...
Is that the fireball thing?
Was that Ken or Ryu?
I think it was Ryu, wasn't it? Hadouken.
Yeah, one of them said the up something well, else. Well,
wouldn't it have been Ken saying, how do Ken?
Oh, no, it was Ryu.
I am great Ken.
No, it was Ryan saying, oh, how do Ken?
How do Ken?
Did I say Ryan, not Ryu?
Ryu.
You said Ryan.
I did say Ryu, didn't I?
Ryu.
I just thought, what were we talking about? Oh, that's it. On a previous podcast or something you put out, if you listen, it was you, Barker, and I can't remember what we
it's
were
always
listening
fucking
to.
Me.
You Barker, is that a new website?
We were talking about X-Men Oranges Wolverine, you said.
Yeah, the size of a tangerine, I told you.
I can't remember where I heard it. I think it might have been on the last Oddcast.
It was the one we were talking about Wolverine.
Yeah.
I called it X-Men Oranges.
Oranges.
Yeah. The size of a tangerine. But this meteorite, has it got anything to do with this asteroid that nearly hit Earth?
No, they asked NASA that straight away, and NASA, in all its normal way of,
it's
of
all
talking,
its glory.
Absolutely wonderful with their answer, just turned around and said, no.
They're trying to look what they know, like they know what they're talking about. It could have been either way, they really can't tell, but come out with a definitive answer.
No.
Completely different trajectory.
We've got better things to do than answer your stupid question.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because they were saying that meteorites always come and hit Earth all the time, but it always seems to happen over water. And no one ever seems to see it. That's
because 70% of Earth's mass is, Earth's surface is water. Yeah. Therefore, the odds are well in favour of it.
Is that you trying to tell it to M. Night Shyamalan when he made Signs and then aliens come down?
You trying to say that's what?
M. Night Shyamalan.
M. Night Shyamalan.
We go together.
Shyamalan. But you ever seen Signs? The whole idea them aliens come down, they come down to take over the world, but they have one weakness. They're allergic to water.
But who's this Sam in the Lamb bloke?
Director.
Right.
And the writer of The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs.
I've seen some of those.
Alien Water.
Lady in Water.
Oh, Lady in Water.
Yeah. So this asteroid. Asteroid flyby.
Flyby one? Yeah, the closest one that ever recorded.
Did hear us, isn't it?
It wasn't going to.
We'd have noticed.
What would happen if it had hit us? Would we all die?
No. Because it was only 45
meters across.
The dinosaurs
would have been made extinct.
The dinosaurs would have been
extinct. Yeah.
The one the Komodo dragon.
It would have landed on its head.
It would hit that Komodo dragon. Ah! Why me?
So if an asteroid comes through the atmosphere, does that make it an asteroidite?
Asteroidite.
Yeah.
I think it just makes it a fucking big lump of rock.
Yeah.
And if a hermaphrod comes through the atmosphere, what does that become?
Hermaphrodite.
An hermaphrodite.
Yeah, but the way you said hermaphrod.
Hermaphrod. Because if I said hermaphrod, it didn't sound right, but a hermaphrod sounds...
a little bit more science-y.
Right. Anyway, Ash, keep talking, please. I'm not helping here.
Will's like, I have no idea what the fuck I'm talking about.
No, they were supposed to be completely independent, because they came in...
Independent.
Yeah,
they're separate. The astral goes past, goes, we're not doing me, honest, yeah, honest. Yeah. I'm just passing by.
That was not me, alright?
Not me.
We were supposed to have a chat, but he cocked up the driving and crashed.
Fucking me, wee! I wanted to hit North Korea one day.
Why?
Why?
So that they launch all-out nuclear war, because they'll blame the Americans for sending a meteorite their way.
That's what we
and find. That way we can live in, like, the universe created in Fallout 3, but without the reference to the previous 1950s culture that went downhill from there. But you're saying you want total nuclear Armageddon.
I didn't say that. How did you get that from... I wish that...
Because you said you hope an asteroid or meteorite
you can imagine
hits.
How differently they would have reported it. They would have said, look what they've attacked us with! A massive meteorite!
And they would have launched all their fucking... they would have launched all their nukes!
They had a big trebuchet on a
this
boat.
This is what I'm saying.
Fired a lump of rock.
Oh, yeah. Maybe South Korea then, so North Korea can watch and go...
Oh. Yeah, but then South Korea... then South Korea would probably attack North Korea because they'd blame them and then they'd launch the fucking nukes!
Everyone, just chill out, man.
Just chill out. Well, don't hit me! It was an asteroid then! Or a meteorite! Or an asteroidite!
Oh, I'm after it.
The Oddcast Podcast UK, a podcast that taught my nan about strangle wanking!
No, cut. And we've reached the end of the podcast.
Already? Someone putting those interviews in the middle.
We've been chatting, had interviews that took a big chunk of it out. With the interview, you can actually go and watch on YouTube. I don't know why you'd want to watch it after you've just listened to it, but maybe you skipped here. I don't know.
Just want to see what he looks like.
Yeah, you can see it's all blurry vision. Because that's what Google Hangout does sometimes, really blurry. But, we've reached the end of the podcast. Episode 78.
Oh.
We're getting through these, aren't we? 78 episodes.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah, we'll be at 79 in no time.
Yeah. And maybe 80. And 81, and 82, and 83, 84, 85.
Is that what comes after? I reckon we just skip 87. I just don't like 87. It's a shit number.
Racist.
Numberist.
Numberist. What do we? Yeah. Digitalists. Digital.
Digitalist.
Digiist.
No, I think numberist or numerist.
Numerist. I like numerist.
Numerist.
Yeah, we go numerist, you numerous bastard. Fucking frank calculators of people.
Oh, look, I'm not touching
just with the number 87.
They're dirty.
Yeah. You take your sums and you get out of here, boy. This is an ad-free zone.
What?
I don't know.
Ad, like,
I wish this. Subtract. I wish. Oh, right. Sorry. I wish this room was an ad-free zone.
Oi! Don't need to be like that, is it?
No, I just don't want adverts. I mean, we had to do that jingle for the like podcast we put in. What were you thinking?
Wasn't advert. It was a commercial. It was a bumper. See, that's what in America they call them bumpers. Hey, we're going to put a bumper in. You're like. It's an advert.
What do they call the bit on either end of a car?
Fender.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Fender benders.
We're calling them on boats. I was thinking about trousers the other day, because I often do.
As you do.
Well, because I will say, in this one instance, we British are wrong.
Okay.
What are pants?
Pants are things we wear underwear. Over our genitals.
Well, that's the thing. Because pants is short from pantaloons, basically.
Which
and
are...
we've trousers.
Oh, okay.
But we've taken underpants and we've dropped the under, and that's what we call pants. So while they've shortened pantaloon, which is the correct way, we've actually removed the vital word from the front. So what we call pants actually are underpants, and what they call pants are pants.
Okay.
Fuck me, should we stop now?
No, yeah. Will, I think you need to apologise to every American out there.
On this particular point, America, I'm sorry, but I've never told you you're wrong. It's just what you call football is an aberration.
Do you even know where the word soccer come from?
I can't remember. I did know this one, but I can't remember. Do you know?
Yeah.
Go on then.
Soccer is an abbreviation of the term football association football.
That's it.
And which is...
It's a bit of a shit one, isn't it?
No, which is actually association football. Every country has a version of it.
Right.
Hmm. So our football in this country, we call it football, but it's called association football, hence soccer to the Americans. But their version of football is American football, gridiron.
Yeah, because you get Aussie rules football.
Aussie rules football.
And we don't actually take the piss out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much rugby
but we don't
football,
take though. The piss out of rugby football or Aussie football. It's just the fact that what we call football, and only say football, the Americans call football.
I'd rather Americans
and we call American football.
I'd rather they call it American rugby. I'd give them a bit more credit and say, yeah, that makes a bit more sense.
Well, I mean, they should call it Yale or something instead, really.
Well, it's gridiron football, really. That's what it's called, gridiron football.
Okay.
But no one ever calls it gridiron football.
Well, basically, I like to call it rugby with girly armour and padding.
Exactly. I like
and overly complex rules.
I'm a fan of it. I like it. I watch Super Bowl when it was on.
Yeah, but you'll watch any old shit. We had this conversation about Splash just earlier.
I didn't watch Splash.
You watched it.
You said you watched it.
No, I didn't. I'm sure he said he did.
No, I said, no, go back and listen. I didn't watch it.
Can we just go and do our own sport of Fruit Ninja?
Oh, who wants to see a video of Will slicing a potato with samurai sword?
Oh, that's it. We were talking about this, and I don't really have any fruit, so we're going to do potato. We're going to give Potato Ninja a try.
I'm scared, though.
Well, you should be. I've had five beers.
It's been sharpened.
Give it a crack.
Don't give it a crack, Will. Just do it.
I've had 1¾.
Well, aren't you slow?
Yeah.
He's still on the medicine from the getting his foot done.
I'm on good juice.
Right, should we sign out then?
Yeah, thank you for listening. Oddcast Podcast. Follow me at Barker Podcast. Follow Will at.
No, I wouldn't bother. Badger Prodder.
And follow Ash.
Confused as fuck.
You still haven't tweeted. No, as of at the moment, you might have tweeted yeah. Later. Who knows?
It was 2 weeks ago we set it up. And
there's a video up on the YouTube page. You can actually go and watch us.
It's dull as shit.
Oh, most pointless video ever. But it's
boring.
I wouldn't go most pointless video ever because I've heard about this thing called Splash, right?
Right, go to barkerpodcast.webs.com and join us for episode 79. It's going to be amazing, I promise.
Yeah, it'll be out in about a week, I reckon.
Yeah, there you go. So, bye.
The Oddcast Podcast UK, the podcast nobody is listening to. # not listening.
Right, tell her where to find us.
Right. Go to www.barkerpodcasts.webs.com or thepodgodsnetwork.com to listen to all the podcasts.
Read the rest.
I am bloody reading it. Also find it on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Simply type in the Oddcast Podcast UK. Okay, can I go now?
And that's a wrap. Good job, Rita.
Fuck off, Adam.